Lainey, hi.
Hi.
Yeah, thank you for patiently waiting and getting to do this.
Oh, fine. I mean, I probably won't have a very long interview with you because I wasn't a sort of residential Greenham woman in that way. I visited a few times. But there was an occurrence that I thought might be of interest at some point. So, yeah.
Okay, great. I mean, the thing is, quite a lot of women didn't live there, but they were still Greenham women, and also, like, some women just went for a day and it changed their lives. So
Yes.
every voice is really important. But would you like to just give a little bit of background about yourself, like what part of the country you were in from, and how you got, initially got heard about Greenham and got involved?
Yeah, well, I have lived in West Cornwall now for well since 2003. I'm a professional actor. My visits to Greenham would have been in the late 70s and early 80s. I was quite an active member of CND when I was a student. I was a student at Warwick University. I did French. And in my final year in particular, and then in the years after when I was at drama school and my early years as an actor, I was active in. Well, active in that I went on a lot of marches. I was also in the Anti-Nazi League and all the stuff around apartheid and all that. I was politically involved, sort of in general, really. It wasn't the whole of my life, but if there was a march going on, I'd probably go on it. Miners' strike later on, and all that sort of thing. So yeah, I was politically engaged, and my first visit to Greenham would have been the ring around the base. You know, when a huge number of people turned up to join hands around the base. What year would that have been?
It's actually this year it's 40th anniversary of Embrace the Base.
Is it?
Yeah.
So I think that would have been my first visit. And that was extraordinary. And I remember putting a photograph of my two younger sisters and our dog, pegging it to the base and being very moved by that because I suddenly thought, oh my God, that's who would die. That's who would die if this thing stays here and things, you know, escalate, which of course. So, and then later, I suppose it would have been about a year later. I was living in London by then with a friend who was a senior academic at the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine, and she was very politically engaged as well. And she had a really glamorous friend who always insisted, she went to Greenham a few times and always insisted on full makeup, high heels, fur collar. Because she said, you know, it's all of us. It's not, you know, that the stereotype image of what a Greenham woman looks like is wrong. We're all in this. So she used to turn up looking immaculate, and we went a couple of times. Yeah, the particular event that I remember most clearly was my friend Liz and I decided to go and spend a night. It wasn't a particular event or anything. We just went to spend the night, and we took our sleeping bags and, you know, flasks and all that sort of thing. And we sat in front of one of the gates. Can't remember which gate it was, with a group of other women. And we sang into the early hours. I remember singing No Man's Land by Eric Bogle, which went down quite well. It was a really nice night. And then in the early hours of the morning, some military policemen needed to get through, and we were sitting in the way. And basically, one of them shoved a boot in Liz's face really quite violently. It wasn't quite a kick, but it was an assault. It was horrible and very upsetting. So we stayed a little longer, and then on our way home, we called in at the police station in Newbury to make a complaint. And they were not pleased to see us. I'm sure you had plenty of dealings with the Newbury police being a regular. I don't know, how did they treat you?
It depended who was watching.
Right.
Really, you know. But carry on.
Yeah. So anyway, months went by and we were living in a flat in Brixton, and one day there was a knock at the door and two plainclothes detectives were there to take down some more notes. So we thought, oh, well, maybe this is going to go further. Maybe this complaint will go somewhere. And they sort of took down all the notes and were very non-committal. And then they stood up and pretty much told us we were a couple of stupid little girls and that it would go no further. And that's my story, really. That's my big Greenham story. I mean, I don't have any more to add other than I thought, I mean, I was quite young at the time. I suppose I was in my mid-20s, but Liz was in her mid-30s. And as I say, was an established senior academic, you know, to be spoken to like that was gobsmacking. And it's that thing of thinking, I don't know what do you say to that. So they left, and that was the last I heard of it. But that was a bit of a game changer when I realized that actually as a citizen I was not taken seriously.
I would add, as a female citizen, at the time,
yeah,
maybe now as well. Okay. So, you were a member of CND. So, did you go on any Aldermaston marches? I mean, where was your anti-nuclear introduction?
I went to Warwick University, and we would travel to London for marches mostly. I don't think there was, I can't remember, there wasn't much going on in the Midlands in that respect. You'd get a lift to London and go there. And anti-Nazi League as well tended to be London. I remember a march from Westminster to the East End, but that was anti-Nazi League. And I've got quite a lot of them conflated in my mind. There was so much going on, you know, during the 80s, the poll tax thing and the miners' strike, and I seemed always to be in Trafalgar Square marching for something, but I never did an Aldermaston march, no.
Oh, okay. So it sounds like you did quite a lot of mixed actions and marches. How did you find the difference between doing Greenham stuff and it being women only?
I think there was a pride in it that I felt keenly to see what women are doing. And there are times, and I'm, you know, I'm a married woman. It's not that I dislike men, but I still despair of the way men run things. Just listening to the news this morning about Afghanistan and the burqa and the abortion laws in America and all that kind of thing, you think, please, are we still here? So when I look back to what happens when women take control, I feel proud of being a woman. I feel pleased I'm a woman, and long for the day when we actually do have a proper say in the way things are all over the world. I never could have imagined when I was that sort of 20-year-old that we would still be here. I really thought that all that pressure, which seemed all of it to be so rational, whether it was anti-apartheid, whether it was, whether it was feminism, whether it was anti-nuclear, all of it was so rational. You can't argue with it. It's sensible.
Yeah.
Why are we still like this?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I felt that sense of, and the commitment of the women who were there all the time. I had immense pride, immense admiration for somebody who would like yourself, sort of go there and be the heart of it. And still be, they were still very welcoming. There was no, there was never any sense of, oh, well, you know, you just visit from time to time. You're not a proper Greenham woman. There was never that. We were always welcome. And that was wonderful as well. So there was no, there didn't seem to me to be factions within it. I don't know if that's true. You would know more about that to me. It seemed to be all embracing, which was wonderful.
That was certainly the ethic. I mean, I think sometimes someone would turn up and we'd had a really bad day and they might not be overjoyed with enthusiastic welcomes. And there was, depended on the time of, you know, the time of the era, but there was a lot of suspicion around undercover journalists.
Right.
At the time. I mean, now we know a bit more about undercover cops as well, but mostly that. What I mean, that was what we tried to do. Were you involved with the local group in any way? Were you just doing this like as part of being a student, you know, in a student group? Or
no, I wasn't a member of a local group. It's quite hard as an actor to be a member of anything. You commit yourself to something and then you go off to Manchester to do a job. Or you commit yourself to something and all the meetings are in the evening or on a Saturday and you're working at the wrong end of the day and that kind of thing. So I've never joined things for very long. I was a fairly active member of the Labour Party for a short while when I lived in Lewisham. But I left over unilateralism when they dropped unilateralism. I left because I felt very strongly that I don't care what other people have got. I don't want it here.
Would you like to expand a bit on unilateralism for not everyone listening would necessarily know what you're talking about?
Well, there's the idea that you decommission nuclear weapons as a joint thing with other countries, and it's kind of negotiated all along the way, or you just get rid of them yourself, and that's unilateralism. And I just wanted them out of Britain. I don't care how many warheads somebody else has got. I don't want them here. And that would have been my starting point. So, and I am still like that, because I think being a nuclear power actually puts you in danger. And maybe that's not very rational, and maybe somebody, you know, would say that's not logical, you have to do it as a world thing. But I think the problem is we've got to start somewhere. And so all these years later, I am unchanged. I do not want nuclear weapons in this country. I don't care what Moscow has. I don't care what America has. I don't want them here. And I left the Labour Party over that one thing.
I was going to ask you about your personal legacy of your experience of Greenham. I think you've just explained a bit about that. Also, like, what do you think that the broader legacy of Greenham was, rather than your personal legacy? Have you got any thoughts on that?
I think it still lives on as what can be done. I don't know whether this generation, I don't know, it's hard to describe it to them, isn't it? But if you look at Extinction Rebellion, I see things in them that remind me sometimes of that. You know, when you see lines of young women dressed in red going through Waterloo Station, you think, yeah, that's it. I think that's kind of it as well. I also just think about how quickly, once the silos were gone, how quickly the grass started to grow through the concrete at Greenham. And I do sometimes tell, I don't have any children, but I've got some nieces and nephews I'm really fond of, and we talk a lot. They're in their 20s and 30s. And I do tell them that, because I know their big anxiety is about climate And I find, oddly enough, that although Greenham was about nuclear weapons, I think it was also about nature. And the things we do which are so awfully against nature, so horribly against nature, and how, you know, nature has reclaimed, you know, the common. Maybe that.
I think when it comes to sort of environmental politics today, that they often miss the inclusion of the damage and the extraction that war and militarism, you blow up whole areas of countries, you're extracting all that money goes into weapons production, and I find it a little bit lacking in a lot of the contemporary environmental arguments, because it's a huge contributor, and they don't really seem to want to add up that environmental damage that war does, as well as humans. But
yes, I mean, even right now, you know, the weapons trade that's going on with Ukraine, there's somebody is lining their pockets in a very big way, and the destruction and the death, and it's just just this morning, you know, I said to my husband, I never would have imagined. So we listened to this woman from Afghanistan, and then we listened to the news from Mariupol. As I never would have imagined when I was young that we were still here after all this time. So it's very defeating.
I'm only going to ask you this because you're a performer, but would you like to sing No Man's Land?
Oh.
It's something that we did a lot of, isn't it? Singing. Yes. And you've just given us this story about you were singing this song. I'm not aware of that song, and it would be really nice if you wanted to, if you don't want to, just say, because we can eliminate this bit, you can edit this bit.
I'll show you the first verse.
Do you remember the words? That's the thing.
I don't remember the whole song. It's quite a long song, but I'll do the first verse. See if I can find a good key. Well, how do you do, Private William McBride? Do you mind if I sit here down by your graveside and rest for a while in the warm summer sun? Been walking all day now and I'm nearly done. And I see by your gravestone you were only 19. When you joined the glorious fallen in 1916. And I hope you died quick, and I hope you died clean. Oh, Willie McBride, was it slow and obscene? Did they beat the drums slowly? Did they play the pipes slowly? Did the rifles fire o'er ye as they lowered you down? Did the pipes play the last post in chorus? Did the pipes play the flowers of the forest?
Beautiful. Oh, thank you. You got that spot on, and there seem to be references. Was it about an Irish soldier? Sounded like
Yes.
Irish songs.
It's a song by Eric Bogle, who I think was a Scottish-born Australian writer. And he wrote quite a lot of anti-war songs, protest songs and that kind of thing. And they were all rather beautiful as well. He managed to get the anger and the beauty into the songs, I thought. All the Fine Young Men, I think, is another one of his, which is he wrote quite a lot about the First World War, I think. Possibly his generation, because he's dead now. I think he's quite a long time dead. So he would have looked back at the First World War as the big waste, the great wasteful war. So that was the one he wrote.
Oh, thank you. How did you find out about this oral history project?
I think it might have been that there's a Facebook group called Kapow, which is Cornish women. It's a sort of feminist Facebook page, if you like. And we tend to notify each other about things. So I must have seen it on Kapow, I think.
Is that a bit of a take on Kernow?
Yes. Yes, Kerpow. Yes.
Oh, great.
Facebook. Yeah.
Oh, great.
That might be where I found it. Yeah, probably is. It's probably a Facebook thing.
Oh, okay. So the connection's probably with Scary Little Girls, the company.
Yes. Yes.
And part of this is the funding is to do the research, but then take it out. It's lost history. It's yes. Lost history. So the idea is to take it out into the public spaces. And we're going to be walking every other month. We're going to be walking from Blue Gate on the north of the Common to Aldermaston Women's Peace Camp. Aldermaston Women's Peace Camp is still going, one weekend a month.
I didn't know.
So we're it's probably it's easier to do in the summer, isn't it? But we're still carrying Greenham home one way or another. Have you got anything else you want to add?
No, just only to thank everybody who set up the camp, and thank you. Sorry, it's making me cry.
Oh.
Thank you for doing it.
Oh, that's so nice, Lainey. Thank you. Thank you. I so enjoy doing this, actually, because I'm learning. Every time I interview someone, I learn more about Greenham. So you're going to make me cry next.
Well, bless you. Thank you very much and good luck with it. And yes, please keep me posted.
Go well then.
Lovely.
Thank you.
Good luck.
And you. Bye.
Bye.